Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody.
It's Monday night. And that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden. And the Constitution Hour is brought to you by PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. I don't have a lot that I can say tonight. Of course, that's subject to change. Excuse me. And if I can get through the first 10 minutes or so, I'm sure that everything else will work its way out. As you all know, of course, here on Patriot Families, we are a family. And even though some of us have never met in person, we know each other only by our internet persona, if you will. Nonetheless, it's interesting how connected we become simply through the internet without ever necessarily meeting face-to-face in person. But you really feel like you get to know someone if it's only their internet personality. But oftentimes I think we let our guard down more in this format than we ever would in person. You know, I talked about this before. Many times we wear different faces depending on the company that we're in. And I think that's just a natural human thing that we do. I bring this up because over the weekend, one of the other family communities, the only other family community that I'm involved in, lost a very dear young man. And it breaks my heart. But it's also very uplifting to see the outpouring of love and admiration from otherwise total strangers in the forum that I'm on. Now, this young man was a young man in his late 20s, with a wife, two very young children. And the community has really reached out to her, and just donations. We have, more than I can begin to tell you, the outpouring that we have seen. And while I am feeling a tremendous burden, just saddened at the loss, someone I never actually met in person. But I'm also humbled by the outpouring of love and adoration from a lot of other folks that didn't know John any more than I did. You know, 2 Corinthians 1:3, praise be to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, And I think that that is appropriate as we move forward. Today, when I got home, my wife hit me with the news that another person that we're very dear friends with had passed away today. And while the one individual we've known for almost 20 years, the other I've only known for a year or so on an internet forum, and yet both have made an impact on my life and the lives of many, many other people. And it's not for them that I'm sad. It's for my loss, my personal loss of their friendship and what could have been down the road. But also I think of their families, and especially John's family, but the other gentleman, Mark, his family as well. Children, spouses, other loved ones, close friends. I think of the grieving process. And then I think about, you know, when my own father passed away not long ago. And we all grieve. We go through that process. But before long, we find ourselves right back in the same old groove, doing what we always did before, doing what we'll continue to do until we're the one that someone is speaking about our passing. And I think it's what we do, ladies and gentlemen, with that time, that's what really matters. That, and of course, our relationship with God and our relationship with one another. Even those that we see as an adversary, how we treat other people, it's important. It's heartbreaking. For me, I think of my family when I was that age. And, you know, my wife and my children would have been devastated, but they would have gotten over it. They would have spent a lifetime growing up without a father. Or maybe they would have gotten a replacement dad. You just never know. But it just weighed heavy on my heart to think about John and his family. They put up pictures, of course, and I wish I could post them in here. It's just an awesome family. Meanwhile, John's wife was at the hospital with their son at the same time that John passed away. He had pneumonia, little two-year-old boy. John had come home Thursday night not feeling well, came home early from work, and went to bed. Friday, when he woke up, told his wife that his legs didn't feel right. His feet were numb. And so they knew something was more, it was more than just the flu. And they went to the hospital. And they realized very quickly that it was spinal meningitis and a pretty nasty strain of it. They sedated him, and they were hitting him with a barrage of different drugs to try and kill the meningitis. And John passed away Friday evening. And his wife was pretty devastated. And at the same time, she had a two-year-old little boy in the hospital as well, a different hospital, Children's Hospital down in Denver. Just dang. So it's been a less than stellar few days for me. But, you know, I'm still here. And they got to go home. And we'll all have our time sooner or later. I'm not trying to rush mine, but it is what it is. But you know, it sometimes puts things in perspective as we fuss and complain. And we should fuss and complain about things that are done in our name or things that are done against us, against our will, against our consent. So I just wanted to take this time at the beginning of the show to kind of pay tribute to John and Mark and their families in a time of grieving. And I think we should take these times to remind one another that life is a gift. And we should be very cautious what we do with that gift, how we conduct ourselves with others. And as difficult as it can be, and it seems these days it's even more difficult to conduct ourselves, to act towards others the way we would want them to treat us. You know, that golden rule, do unto others, even when we don't like the others because they're naughty little politicians or lawyers or bureaucrats or regulators or whatever other tag we want to place upon them. I see the markets today, what little I caught looked to me like they weren't doing so great. I'm going to sneak over to my market quotes and just take a peek look. But when I looked earlier today, well, they look like they've rebounded a little bit today. The dollar looks kind of flat. Boy, it's a good time to be an Englishman in Great Britain, isn't it? If you're coming to the U.S., you're buying stuff for 40 cents on the dollar. That's got to be, or 40 cents on the pound, I should say. That's got to be a pretty good discount. I really don't have much else that I could add, I don't think, at this point. I haven't seen any news. Don't watch it. Really haven't listened to any radio today. I did note that there was a White House correspondence dinner. And I'm sure that Obama told some real stingers and zingers, and you know, everybody was laughing and having a good time, I'm sure of that. Kind of like Nero fiddling as Rome burns, you know. It is a disgusting display, and you know, I heard some of the comments today, Linda, but to me, and your mileage may vary, but to me, all of the jokes and the, you know, the levity regarding very serious, somber topics it's unacceptable. It's in very poor taste. And I hearken back to when President Bush was joking about weapons of mass destruction. And people thought that was funny. I didn't think it was funny. And I'm sure the over 1 million Iraqis who were murdered or killed, I'm thinking they probably didn't think it was funny. And I'm betting their families wouldn't find the humor in it either. It makes me very angry. And in particular, at a time like this, when my heart is just crushed. It really pisses me off when these jackasses can sit and joke about the death of other human beings. And they think it's funny. And the irony is, they really do think it's funny. And we wonder what's wrong. We wonder why we have the government that we have. Really? I'm with George Carlin on this one, folks. This is the best we have to offer. Garbage in, garbage out. There is no respect for human life. There is no respect for one another. These people, hell, most of them don't even respect themselves, much less respecting someone else, their neighbor, their loved one, their spouse. Look at the guy in Sterling. It really? Nobody that I heard on any of the news reports bothered to mention or point out or belabor the fact that he's married, he's committing adultery with this. That is, to me, the bigger issue than him being upset that he doesn't want her to be seen in public with other men who happen to be black, because it looks bad on him, because she's supposed to be his little trinket or bauble. This woman is getting millions of dollars worth of apartment, jewelry, lavish things. Does she not recognize that she is a slave? Does she not recognize that she is nothing more than a cufflink to this man? Seriously. It's disgusting. It's wrong. And I'm willing to bet that even in the state of California, it's illegal. What do you want to bet? You bet they still got adultery laws on the books in the state of California? I'm betting they do. And you want to know why? Because that's grounds for divorce. Of course, you have to be married. And if you're married, that's a legal contract under state law. Nobody wants to talk about that. Nah, we'd rather bitch and complain that we don't like this man's opinion, blacks. Having an opinion and being an idiot, it's not against the law. Adultery is. Are we seeing a double standard here? Are we seeing a bit of a problem here? We beginning to understand the problem. We're in trouble, guys. But then we've known that for a while, haven't we? We've known that we're in trouble. We've known that this whole sordid charade is nothing but trouble. You know, someone mentioned something today about Cinco de Mayo. I said, yep, it's another reason to go out and party. Pretty much the truth. Didn't have anything to do with the French, did it? The Day of the Dead? Anyway. Who knows? Who cares? People are going to keep right on rocking and partying. What was that party like? It's 1999 or something, was the old song. In other words, don't pay attention to what's going on in front of you. Don't worry about the fact that Rome is on fire and the world's on the brink of war. Never mind that you're printing up paper to buy your baubles and trinkets. Never mind that you're bastardizing the law of nature and the law of God. Don't worry about all that. Let's just party. Yeah, well, folks, the party's going to come to an end sooner or later. And it's not going to be pleasant. In fact, it's liable to be downright painful. To some, at least. Anybody have anything they want to talk about? You're welcome to call in. The call-in number is 646-378-0321. Call in and let me know what's on your mind. What do you want to talk about today? What's bugging you? Anything in the news? Anything you're worried about? Anything you want to comment on? I truly have absolutely nothing. I think my mind is about a can of soup right about now. No problem, Linda. Bill, how are you guys doing out there? You guys getting all geared up for Delaney? You're cooking. What are you cooking, Miss Linda? Expand on Ukraine. I couldn't tell you a single thing about Ukraine right now. I haven't seen anything about anything for the last 3 days. I just really haven't. I have not... Have not looked at any information, haven't done any reading, haven't listened to the radio. I've kind of been focused elsewhere. And so I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't seen or heard the latest of what's going on over there. I can only well imagine that they've probably, things are fixing to escalate exponentially. I did read something about some war games or something the other day, but I honestly, my heart's just not been in it, and it's probably going to be less in it tomorrow than it is was today. I do apologize. I got a lot going on lately in my own personal life, and unfortunately, that has no alternative but to spill over into the program, the show, and in particular, the specifics that are going on right now. I didn't even have a chance to look into the reports that I normally read about, you know, the monetary goings and comings. What's going on in the gold and silver world and around the world. I just have not had a chance to do it. And the market doesn't look like it likes Ukraine much right now. But I, honestly, I've just been completely shot. That's outstanding, Bill. I'm glad to hear that. You know, we need more people, and here's Miss Linda to help bail me out this evening. Miss Linda, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? And I, you know, condolences for the losses. I mean, we just went through it. We're still, I got, you know, family members who are just crying all the time still because it hit them hard. So, you know, lots of prayers for those folks, and that's what you have to do is, you know, just wish the family well, let them know you're supportive, and try to help them through that process, because it is sometimes lengthy, you know. Everybody has their own method of dealing with it. So it is a sad time. So, and, yeah, like you, not that we want to expedite our own exiting out, but the ones who have gone are the ones who are, you know, having a good time.
Yeah, dang it, they're out of here.
Crying.
I'm still here. I'm stuck. But, you know, it's,
well,
it's a good
and
stuff.
I think that,
I got all my little money.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the reason that we have, you know, our minds don't know how to grasp that finality of a physical, because we're in a physical world, that they're not here anymore. And it's just hard for us to even contemplate, you know, it's, we're so used, we grow up with sight and touch and sound, you know what I mean? That we don't know spiritual side of us.
It's
ourselves.
Our, yeah.
It's
our
reality.
Reality.
And it's not anything to be ashamed of. It's just the way it is. And that's why I think it takes so much out of you to, you know, have to go through that realization. But, again, I think that people just, they don't rely on God enough, because he's the greatest comforter, that, and that's just what people
Absolutely.
Need to do. And I think that talking about the world. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think back to, and I know he's not in here, and I hate to even mention it, but I mean, I remember the trouble, the grieving that Rod was going through, and, you know, I felt so bad, mm-hmm. so helpless that, you know, there is nothing that any of us can do or say that is going to mend that broken heart, that big.
Yep, because we don't have that magic
Chuck,
wand. We just don't have it.
One of our family members, Chuck, has been going through some serious difficulties. You know, I don't know if you read his post on Patriot Family. I just hate to see it. And it breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it breaks my heart to know that, you know, John's wife is now a widow and a very young mother. And dang it, you know, it tears my heart out.
Yeah.
I mean, the older folks, you know, it's still a loss, but I mean, they had a great run, you know, when they're 70 or 80 years old and they pass away, it makes it a little easier.
A little bit, but
I mean, still, we grow so
fond
of
that. Because at least you say, well, they had some time. They had, you know,
right.
a good run
they,
at
they
it. As you, and
ran
so,
a good race.
Right.
You know.
But going on to the world stage, I think that what people were talking about today was that the way things are shaping up in Ukraine, it looks like they're gonna have a full blown, you know, like World War III with Russia doing whatever the heck they want to do. So, which is not a good thing.
Well,
and
you know, I think we have and continue. But I think we always have ascribed far too much power to the evil empire of the Soviets, you know. I think it was a lot of hokum. And quite honestly, they were trying to compete with what they saw as the evil empire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, look around right now, today, on the globe. Can you think of an entity that exists that could be a threat to an individual or a nation or the globe, the entire world? There's really only one that comes to my mind as a actual viable threat, verifiable threat. And it's not China, and it's not Russia, and it's not North Korea, and it's not Iran, and it's not Iraq, and it's not Syria. And I think we all know who I'm talking about. It's us.
Well, That's been going on for quite some time. Yeah.
Precisely. Exactly. And you look at what's been done in our name around the globe. Can you fault any of the other countries? And I'm not trying to blame America first, but damn it, we have to take responsibility for what has been done. And, you know, from where I sit, it's very little more than mafioso. I mean, look at the tactics, for God's sakes. Why don't we ask Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein what happens when, oh, well, we can't, can we? Because we know what happens when you piss off.
And I wanted to encourage the others to call in because I'm kind of going to be in and out here. So.
Well, I'm probably going to kill this thing early because I'm just not into it, and I apologize. But
yeah, it's hard
if you're
ill prepared and you've had some things going on.
Yeah, and, you know, I already wasn't prepared and was pretty bummed with John, and it's, I cannot tell you what an amazing outpouring we have seen. And it's the cutest thing.
That's great.
On our forum, and it's called The Outdoors Trader, John's avatar was, I don't know, one of these little guys, I guess it's called Dave the Minion. You know, from one of the little Pixar things, the little little yellow guy with the bib overalls and the goggles. I don't know if you've seen that character or not. But that was his screen name, was Dave the Minion. And one of the guys found a cartoon picture of Dave the Minion with shedding a little tear, put a banner under it, says, R.I.P. John Skinner.
Oh.
And
well,
I'm willing to bet that at last count, there's 150 people on this forum that have all adopted that as their avatar for a month now. And one of the guys, there's three donation threads that they opened up to donate money to John's widow and kids. And one of the guys said that, you know, for every person that that took on the avatar and donated, he would donate $1. So, I mean, you know, it's just stuff like that. Just, it's pretty cool. It's an awesome gesture from a whole lot of folks that, you know, never met the man personally. But it's, I'm proud to be a member of that community. Very much so. Yeah. Just a great group of guys. You know, the vast majority of them are those nasty, evil SOBs clinging to their Bibles and their guns, because it is a gun trading forum. You know, that's of course we do have a few atheists in there, and that's okay. We give them every opportunity to run their mouth and hang themselves with their own ropes. But it's still a good community and just a great bunch of guys, including the atheists.
Great.
So. But then, you know, so I got home and I walk upstairs and my wife says, well, I had a crummy phone call this afternoon. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, so-and-so died today. I'm like, holy smokes, just took me for a loop. And I wish I could explain who this person is, but I just can't right now. But, just a double whammy. Well, then I, you know, I just didn't even feel like reading anything or looking into anything, or I was just like, just dang. You know, it's almost, couldn't you just tell me after the show? I hate to be selfish, but darn it. You know, at least then I could have at least maybe given it the old college try.
Yeah. Tonight I'm getting after your show. Getting ready to go down to we have a meeting. I have so many meetings this month from, you know, community things, because we have some attorneys trying to help us with the park owners here just in two little parks. And because we've had so many problems, and the managers that he has hired are just, they're like Himmler and Eichmann. I'm not kidding. It's just unbelievable. It's so bad. And so, you know, that's part of our deal. But we have other issues, and they think they have a good case. These guys wouldn't take this if they didn't think they could win it for us. So the failure to maintain the parks, I mean, these streets are just crumbling. They don't care. They want to devalue the homes so that they can scoop them all up later, you know, and then
right. Well, and they want to make it uncomfortable for people to live there, so they'll just quietly move away on
so
their own. It's a game.
Well, yeah, I know who's behind it and what's behind it. It's just there's so many minions who don't even get it. They don't realize that they're Lenin's useful idiots, but they are. And it's sad because they're not even at the top of the totem pole, although they think they are. That's the irony of it. Because they're wealthy.
I did get to have a little bit of fun with a pollster yesterday evening. That was fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, we're getting ready. We're getting ready for some primaries here in Georgia, and we've got an empty Senate seat. You know, Sexley Shameless is not going to run again. Thank God for small favors. But that just means that, you know, we open up the slot for the next snake to slither in. And, you know, just our governor's son is running and trying to make the claim that he's an outsider. You're the governor's son, for God's sakes. Don't give me this baloney that you're outside of the political beltway or the political sphere of influence. I mean, just please. Oh, but this poor guy, this poor kid that called, you know, and it was a Marist College poll that, and, you know, he's asked me all kinds of questions. He says, well, do you consider yourself a Democrat or Republican or an independent? And I said, well, definitely an independent. And he said, well, if in the upcoming election, he says, you registered to vote. I said, yeah. He said, in the upcoming election, do you see yourself voting for the Democrat or the Republican? And if so, why? I said, you mean to tell me there's a difference? And he kind of chuckled. He kind of chuckled a little bit. And I said, no, I'm not voting. He said, you're not voting? I said, no, sir. Why would I? I said, why am I going to go down and vote for someone who's just going to, you know, try to figure out a way to either regulate and tax me for exercising my rights or strip me of my rights altogether? Because clearly that seems to be the only differentiation that I can see between these two parties of which you're speaking of. And then he asked about, you know, we just got this new HB 60 gun law that our governor signed in into law, which says that we have permission to pretty much carry wherever the hell we want, including government buildings, unless they provide private, you know, armed security at those government buildings, in which case then they can deny us that right. And again, I'm like, really, you know, it's heartening to see that, you know, the wind of change is blowing to where the governor signed a law recognizing that part of our constitutional right that's enshrined in the Second Amendment is permissible, but not all of it. I mean, seriously, you know, here again, I'm not voting for anyone who thinks it's okay to regulate the exercise of my rights. Now, if I, in the exercising of those rights, if I violate the law and cause personal injury to someone or their property, you know, we have laws on the books that can deal with that and prosecute me. So it's not the exercising of my right that is the problem. It's the manner in which I exercise that right, and I didn't take due care and caution. Maybe I was negligent, or maybe I was intentionally trying to harm someone. I mean, that's how this whole thing has gotten so far out of out of whack.
Which means you would be violating God's laws. So, I mean, if you're harming somebody, or exactly. See, this is where these people get into the weeds, and they don't understand what's going on, and they create the weeds, and then they just, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if
for the weeds.
I think I read part of that Alabama court decision. In fact, I'm pretty sure I read the whole thing on one of my shows a week or so ago. But you know, it was very interesting what the court had said in Alabama, and that was regarding the young woman that had been a drug addict, and then her child was born and tested positive for illegal drugs, and the mother was arrested and prosecuted for giving illegal drugs to her child. And it made it all the way to the state supreme. Well, it made it all the way to the state Supreme Court. And the Chief Justice said, I concur with the main opinion and with Justice Parker's concurring special opinion, which rightly notes that because an unborn child has an unalienable right to life from conception, from its earliest stages of development.
Wow.
It is entitled to a life free from the harmful effects of chemicals at all stages of development. I write separately to emphasize that the inalienable right to life is a gift of God that civil government must secure for all persons born and unborn. Our Creator, not government, gives to all people unalienable natural rights. According to our nation's charter, the Declaration of Independence, the United States was founded upon the self-evident truth that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Wow. Imagine that. The Declaration of Independence as the charter for our Constitution, our founding charter. Wow, what a tremendous concept. I think I said it last time. I wonder where I've heard that before. And people will tell you, yeah, but it's not law. Well, don't be telling that too quickly, because the justice actually, and I did not know this until I read this, that, let me find it. Declaration of Independence, 1776, denominated in the United States Code, annotated as one of the organic laws of the United States of America. So guess what? They codified the damn Declaration of Independence into the organic law of the United States of America. So the next time someone tells you that it's not law, you tell them they are, in fact, mistaken.
Good.
It is law.
Cool.
It has been denominated in the U.S. Code, annotated as one of the organic laws of the United States of America. So don't tell me it's not law. It is law, in fact. And, you know, with that, I also mentioned Sir William Blackstone and Blackstone's commentaries on the law. And it was Blackstone that wrote down, and again, it's not even William Blackstone's commentaries. Blackstone is one of these guys that, you know, he's writing a legal manual, right? Like a dictionary or Bible for lawyers, plain and simple. So he's taking what modern society at the time had learned and came to agree upon over the 300 or 400 years or 1,000 years prior to his writing of what the law meant, what it was, the common law, which is what governed England. And he was very clear and concise, and it was that commentary where if you read it, you can certainly see the correlation between Blackstone's commentaries and the words written in our Declaration of Independence. And it's pretty obvious where the concept that Mr. Blackstone is denoting comes from, where it derives from. And where it derives from is the Judeo-Christian Bible. It's really simple. Now that gets the atheist all in a tizzy. Their panties get wadded up and their hair catches on fire, and they run around screaming that we're a secular government. So yeah, government is intended to be secular. That doesn't mean that it can't be based on Christian biblical principles. Oh, well, now that would be a theocracy. No, it wouldn't.
No, because it has not been established. And wasn't there just a Supreme Court ruling the other day allowing,
yes.
Well, I don't know whether it was.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, which
in
is
New
actually
York.
What the First Amendment is. Oh, in New York. Wow.
Yes, in New York, a little town in New York, that they can, there's nothing wrong with them opening their sessions with prayer. In fact, the founders did so.
On the first Constitutional Convention, Ron, they prayed for 2 hours before they opened that thing.
I understand.
I mean, and did you know that back when wasn't it Philadelphia that was the capital? Because they didn't
Correct.
Have D.C. at the time. Okay. They also didn't have a church. Guess which was the church? The building was
the
state capitol building.
Yes, exactly.
That was their church until they built a church. Nobody was establishing anything. And to this day, at least in Oceanside, we still have a Pledge of Allegiance and benedictory prayer before our council stuff. So at least we still have that, and those are good things. So, no, this every time I hear that separation of church and state, my head just bleeds. It shoots blood out.
Now,
because
I'll tell you, Rod Luke and I, and God bless him, and I love Rod Luke, and I think he's incorrect on this next topic or on this topic, but that's okay. We can agree to disagree. We have to look at the wording of the First Amendment, and it's pretty clear. And the grammar, the grammatical structure of the sentence: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. They use the word "an" intentionally. First of all, the first word preceding it, establishment, starts with an E, so "an" is the proper term instead of "a."
Mm-hmm.
But it also denotes something. You see, I think what people are missing is that word establishment. I think people read that and they think Congress is not supposed to pass any laws recognizing religion. That's not what it says.
Nope.
It says an establishment of religion. Now let's change religion to sandwich shop. Congress shall pass no law recognizing an establishment of sandwich shop. That doesn't mean they can't buy sandwiches from Subway. Doesn't
Right.
mean they can't buy sandwiches from Firehouse Subs. What the founders clearly wanted to eliminate was Congress passing a law recognizing the Catholic Church over the Baptist Church, over the Puritans, over the this
right.
church, over the Protestants,
right.
over
the Church of England, and
over
that's
the
all
Mormons,
you could, yeah.
over
the right.
Precisely. It wasn't that Congress could not adopt for its own internal
belief
ceremonies
system.
And whatever,
right?
A religious ceremony, or open with prayer, or praise God, or even
uh-huh.
Christ. They were just barred from passing a law respecting
prohibiting
one establishment
us.
Over another, or
yeah.
or prohibiting they, us from you know
our freedom.
Wanting to go to the Catholic Church instead of the Protestant Church, and
or
whatever.
The Quaker Church, or whatever, right? Or the
right.
Seventh-day
exactly.
Adventist, or whomever.
Precisely.
And why
and,
do you think
and
they
really
chose
the
word?
The biggest prohibition was against making it a law.
Yes. And who were the people prohibited? It was not you and me. It was them. They are the ones who were constrained by the chains of the Constitution, not you and I. In fact, why they used the word religion instead of worship, because can you imagine what these lefties would do with that word? They would tell you where, how often, and all the rest of it, and what, wouldn't they?
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Okay,
sure.
So you can't make a law respecting the Catholic Church over the Episcopal Church. You can't make a law respecting Subway over Firehouse Subs. It's the same thing. So, again, it doesn't even prohibit Congress from making a law saying that this is a Christian nation. Oh, my God, would the atheists go berserk over that?
Well, look, the whole idea was so that that government, our central government, could not cement in place a national theocracy. That's what it was for.
Right. No dictating one branch over another.
Right.
Stay out of it. Leave that to the states,
exactly.
Which, by the way, they did. And the states were not prohibited from doing
so. That's
right. until we got the 14th Amendment and we began using this thing called the Incorporation Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and that ought to tell you, you know, this is the thing that kills me, that ought to tell people everything they need to know about the nature of the United States before the Civil War and after
mm-hmm.
the Civil War.
Right.
Prior to the Civil War, it was a collection of states. After the Civil War, it was a national government. It was a nation. Now they were all under the same charter called the Constitution. But that Constitution's kind of completely rewritten when you include to it the states under all articles of the Constitution.
Yeah, because when Lincoln was deciding that he didn't think secession was okay, when he did what he did and completed his mess, he took the 10th and 9th Amendments and just shredded them right then and there, as far as I could see. He didn't give a rat's behind. He wanted his central, huge central government, you know, centrally planned in every aspect.
He wanted his national government that dictated to the states
and
all the money. And how, I mean, does this not sound like one step away from socialism? That all the money should flow into the central national government and then be doled out for internal improvements. And ladies and gentlemen, what the hell are we watching transpire every single day of the year as we talk about this circus that's being conducted in Washington, D.C. and around
Absolutely.
The globe in your name?
It's exactly, you're correct.
Not?
And I want to remind people, because you, I know you've read a lot of these books, and I think that this is important. When you look at whoever that figurehead is, that president in the Oval Office, you must look at the people who are doing the whispering in their ears. You've got, and I'm not even talking about Obama, I'm talking about people like Lincoln. Look up Henry Clay. When you look at Woodrow Wilson, look up Mandel House. Look at the people who are pushing their agendas on these guys, and as a result, you know what I'm saying, they go out and they perpetrate it, and they do their whistle stops, and they say, you know, I'm going to... In fact, everybody has come to the conclusion that the only reason Lincoln did the emancipation, was for political gain. And I think that he was trying to assuage people like Frederick Douglass.
Right, and who exactly did he emancipate?
Not the ones in the North. I think it wasn't it just the South?
The only slaves that were emancipated were in areas that were not yet held by the Union control.
Right. Exactly.
Anywhere in the Union where there were slaves, they were not emancipated. Only those that were in the war-torn, seceding states that were in areas that were not under control of the Union military, those people were emancipated by decree by Lincoln. Those that were slaves in Maryland, for instance, well, mm-hmm. they didn't get emancipated.
Nope. Yeah, this was all about
and people
tariffs
just
and his
think that
his,
Lincoln
his
was just a great guy. And he was a wicked, horrible, terrible president. And, you know, I don't think that the man intentionally was wicked and horrible. I think he had poor counsel. He followed mm-hmm. his counsel. But also, he really was enamored with Henry Clay. And he just had a completely different ideology mm-hmm. and understanding of what they wanted America to be.
Sure.
Hey, Doc, glad you could join us, sir. I am so glad that you have had the opportunity to delve into that book, because it gives us a different perspective on the history. And, you
sure.
know, when you go to Washington, D.C., and we have deified
yep.
men, flesh and blood men, we've deified
mm-hmm.
them. My God, Lincoln is sitting in a temple. And it is.
Well,
it's the temple to Athena or the temple to Zeus. I mean, it is a replica of a Greek temple. And when you walk in, and someone that was with us, when we walked up to the Lincoln
mm-hmm.
Memorial, and I said, man, look at that temple. And they said, well, it's not a temple. And I said, really? And as we walked into the temple, on the walls it's inscribed, in this temple. And I'm like, you want to read that? What's that say up there?
Oh, wow. God, what'd they do then?
Well.
That's funny.
It's okay. Doc, I think they already have.
What?
But, you
what
know,
you write?
I'm one. He said, wait until they build the Obama monument. I'm wondering, is there a chance, even a slim one, that they're going to buy the arena out there in the Clippers arena and turn that into the Obama Library?
Oh, gag. Yeah.
I'm sorry, was that bad? You know, I said the other day in the forum, and I'm surprised that I didn't get a more vitriolic response, but and said, you know, if Mr. Sterling really wanted to make a statement, he'd sell the team, sell the stadium, and donate all the proceeds to Planned Parenthood.
Oh, wow.
I mean, if he truly hates blacks, right? I mean, if the guy's truly racist and he just hates blacks, why not donate, you know, $20, $30 million to Planned Parenthood, because they're doing a bang-up job of killing blacks.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That's been since its inception. It's so ridiculous. Well, you know, all of these people, the CEOs of different companies, this guy, I mean, you know, who's next? The whole thing is not right to me.
It's very,
you know,
contrived, and it smacks
everybody,
of, to me, it smacks
uh-huh.
of, you know, the thought police. And
well, yeah.
You remember, I talked about this a while back, and I know it's probably a far stretch at this point to make that connection, but I'll go back to my comments on Zacharias Moussaoui. The fact that he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison for his role in the 9/11
mm-hmm.
debacle. The attacks of 9/11, never mind that Mr. Moussaoui didn't do a damn thing to help perpetrate 9/11. The only thing he was truly guilty of is really wanting to help carry out a 9/11. And
mm-hmm.
what made him guilty was that he wrote that down in cyberspace and on his computer, and he voiced his opinion of the United States of America. And he really tried to reach out to, you know, any group that would have him, but nobody would have him. And yet, he's serving life in prison for thought crimes. And let's not forget that, you know, it was just, a few months ago that I was talking about here in the state of Georgia, the little pilot program where it's like Minority Report.
Sure.
Where they're using a computer algorithm to determine when the next crime might occur and what area it might occur in. And they're sending out response teams to that area, and they're making arrests, and arrests. So, I mean, you know, this is like right out of a damn sci-fi movie, and you know, now all these players jumping up and down because of what this man allegedly said, and he's admitted that's him on the tape and whatnot. But I'll tell you something else that I'm not sure everybody understands. What Mr. Sterling used to do for a living, how he made all his billions.
I have no idea.
He was a lawyer.
Oh, God.
So you reckon he might have a few tricks up his sleeve yet?
Well, you know,
and don't
look,
discount that this whole thing could have been contrived.
Or the other problem is we're marching more towards the iron-fisted dictatorial regime, because this is exactly what happened to people in old Soviet, because they were even afraid to whisper in their own homes. And this man was speaking inside of his own house. This is not good, because first they came to the Catholic,
and
you know?
No, I understand completely. The other thing that bothers me with this, though, is, you know, again, and if you listen, I don't know if you listen to the recording, but maybe it's just me, but the man was very measured in his words. And he never once used a derogatory moniker or, you know, appellation blacks. Not once. He never used the N-word or anything like that. To me, just doesn't totally sit with this whole thing.
Well, yeah, because the guy's wealthy, but, you know, that doesn't stop the thought police if they want somebody.
Like I said, too, in the beginning of the show, not only is he wealthy, but he's also an adulterer. But we won't even worry about talking about that, because that's not really where the true offense is at. The true offense is in the fact that, you know, he had the audacity to tell his mistress not to be hanging out with black guys in public because it makes him look bad.
Yeah, right. The whole thing, yeah, there's no moral ethics to this person. You know, it's funny because when you're talking about the amorality, and I know you were talking about that in the top of the show, because I know Glenn had that on today too, talking about the founders and what they believed about a moral society, and that this Constitution was written for an educated and moral body politic. And then way back in history, of course, Adam Smith, same thing. I think his theory of, what was it, moral sentiments, before he did Wealth of Nations. So they kind of go hand in hand. You know, if you don't have morality, and there's no guidelines, and everything's a free-for-all. It's not just anarchy. It's lawlessness. It's godlessness. And, you know, that's what we're seeing today.
Well, and to me, you know, even the atheists seem to disregard the fact that the founders, even those that vehemently claimed to be deists, were, in fact, schooled in seminary.
Yes, and I'm sure that their grandparents and mothers wanted them to be forthright and upright people. You know, if they didn't believe, I'm sure that many of the parents did and had Bibles in the home and read from them, especially when the people like Franklin and Jefferson and the others were children. So it wasn't like they didn't know about beliefs and morality and Judeo-Christian
Oh, certainly. That's absolutely true. And, you know, I mean, honestly, the higher education back in those days was all performed at seminary. You know, that's, and if you were really bright, then they said, you know, you should go and study law. And, you know, that brings me back to my comments about that fellow that we were talking about, Mr. William Blackstone, and his commentaries on the law. When you go and read what, you know, Blackstone's commentaries, Blackstone's pretty adamant about the origin of things. And, you know, again, this is a quote from Blackstone's commentaries on the law. Upon these two foundations, the law of nature and the law of revelation, depend all human laws. Does that sound vaguely familiar? Can we think of a scripture that says, you know, upon these two commandments hang all of the law of the prophets? You notice in a correlation here. That is to say, no human laws should be suffered to contradict these. What are these? The law of nature and the law of nature's God. And that's in specific, this is what this one segment is talking about. He is telling people that the phrase, of the law of nature and nature's God, what that really means, where does that come from? Where do we get this concept? What kind of crazy concept are you talking about here when we talk about this? And he says that there are, it is true, a great number of indifferent points in which both the divine law and the natural leave man to his own liberty, but which are found necessary for the benefit of society to be restrained within certain limits. So, you know, there are some things that God doesn't talk about as being off limits, but for a good society, for peace and tranquility, we need to have some restraint, even though they're not, you know, prohibited under God's law. He says, herein it is that human laws have their greatest force and efficacy with regard to such points as are not indifferent. Human laws are only declaratory of an act in subordination to God. For instance, in the case of murder, this is expressly forbidden by the divine and demonstrably by the natural law. And from these prohibitions arise the true unlawfulness of the crime. Those human laws that annex a punishment to murder do not at all increase the moral guilt of murder or superadd any obligation to abstain from perpetrating murder. And he goes on to say, if any human law should allow or enjoin us to commit murder, we are bound to transgress that human law, lest we must offend the natural and the divine. So again, he's reiterating, look, you know, we can pass human laws, and some of the human laws we attach a punishment to, but it doesn't make murder any worse because we decide we're going to hang the guy.
Or less.
It doesn't change God's judgment on him. We're just making it a little more expedient. We're just bringing him... We're just moving him on up to the Supreme Court of Supreme Courts expeditiously.
For the eternal judgment.
We're going to get him a judgment seat right quick-like. We're just not going to delay.
There you
go.
The
fact that, you know, again, this is getting back to the consent of the governed. This is where, you know, Jefferson, in writing the Declaration,
I promise you,
he was a lawyer, he studied law, and I guarantee you, and you know, if you cannot read this particular section of Blackstone's commentaries and read your scripture and read what Jefferson wrote and see a direct correlation of the three, you got something wrong with you. You got something wrong with you. Your reading comprehension stinks.
Well, you know, Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because when you talk about the consent of the governed, that phrase was used quite readily in what I was speaking on last week from the editorials in the newspapers of even the North on the right to secede, that this union of these consenting states, you know, this is voluntary association, and that this all comes down to, yeah, you can rule, but only by the consent of the governed. And that phrase was used quite readily and handily by these people in these commentaries. And many of them, there was like 450-some newspapers talking about this, and that they damn well have a right to secede. That's what the whole Constitutional Convention was about. And, you know, right.
And see, that's what, you know, in this commentary, you know, Blackstone is talking about with regards to matters that are in themselves indifferent and not commanded or forbidden by those mm-hmm. superior laws by God. He said such, for instance, exporting of wool into a foreign country. There's nothing in the Bible to command you not to do that. He says here the inferior legislature, government, has scope and opportunity to interpose, to put themselves between man and God, and to mm-hmm. make that action unlawful, which before wasn't. And he goes on, he says, if man were to live in a state of nature, unconnected with other individuals, there would be no occasion for any other laws than the law of nature and the law of God. Mm-hmm. Neither could any other law possibly exist. For a law always supposes some superior who makes it.
Right.
And in a state of nature, we are all equal.
Yeah, you've already got your superior. you already got him.
Right. But so in a state of nature, we're all equal without any other superior but him who is the author of our being.
Right.
And he goes on to say that, but man was formed to make society and so on and so forth. So but everything that the legislature does in passing laws must be through the lens of the law of nature and nature's God,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost.
Boy, how far we've strayed, huh?
Yes,
well,
ma'am.
Well, that's why Jefferson wrote the words, we find these truths to be self-evident. And that's, he's talking about God, nature, and man. Yeah, he's talking about
that all men are created equal.
Going, hello. Exactly.
Yep. And he's reiterating in that exactly what William Blackstone said. Mm-hmm. And remember that Blackstone wrote this commentary in 1765. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
And that is that, you know, a law supposes a superior who makes it. And
mm-hmm.
in a state of nature, we're all equal without any other superior. So, gee, we recognize
creator,
that God is the boss, right? He's the
yep.
boss. He makes the rules. And we're
yep.
his creation. And
right.
so if God created me and he created you, well, then he must have made us equal because he didn't give anybody dominion over one another.
That's right.
You can
right.
go right
except
to Genesis 1:26.
Except for the fishes and the animals.
Right. Yeah, he gave man dominion over the whole earth, but not each other.
Right.
That's God's job. He's the boss.
Yep. You betcha.
And so when we go about trying to, you know, when we go about trying to cast laws, not for the public good, but to restrain or restrict others, to control them, that's when we begin to run afoul.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to the Hebrews, happened to the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened in every civilization
sure.
that man has formed since the dawn of time. That's the story of the Bible. That's what's in that book. I mean, there's a lot more
mm-hmm.
into it, and there's a lot of personal,
sure.
You know, wealth of knowledge that can be taken out of that book. But if you just wanted to look at Cliff Notes,
mm-hmm.
you know, a synopsis, you don't follow the boss's rules, you get in trouble, you're grounded. Right. And then when you're grounded, you beg and plead and you sign a contract placing you under even more rules and laws that you cannot uphold. And then you end up saying, I know, we'll make a government. Give us a king. We don't have to vote for him. Divine right of kings and the whole thing. Look how much better off we are now. Now you're really in it up to your ears. Okay, the problem is that man does not have dominion over man.
It
goes back to that story, you know, where Christ says, take the beam from your own eye before picking at the speck of dust in your neighbor's eye. If we would just busy ourselves with minding our own business and helping our neighbor when we see they need help, or offering help when we think they might need help, you know, the world would be a different place. But that's not the nature of man.
And that's true.
We want to erect these
God has to
called government, and we want to control what everybody else does. How dare you smoke a cigarette, or how dare you eat that? That's not good for you.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to form a committee, and we're going to get some regulations, and that's going to be illegal. I mean, you know, and if you insist on doing it, we're going to fine you, and then if you keep doing it, we're going to put you in jail. It's ridiculous, the lengths that we go to.
And if we would just, you know, if we would just go back to his laws and nature's laws, et cetera, and, of course, try to follow the Constitution as it was, I believe, originally intended. I mean, unless you want to go with the anti-federalists, you know, like you say, we'd be better off. And what happens is God, like he did to the Hebrews, you know, he gives them the king and shows them what's what. And then he makes them wander around the desert, and what they do is complain, and they want to go jump back into the wagon of socialism. Because Pharaoh fed them. I mean, my God.
Yeah, because freedom's not good enough. We want more. Oh, you want more, huh?
Well,
Do you understand
freedom is hard.
What more entails? Right. Do you know what more entails? I don't think you get it. You haven't learned your lesson, have you?
he'll keep teaching them.
And that's like I said.
I'm going to let you wrap it.
No problem. Thanks for calling, hon.
Okay. Thank you so
much.
You know,
that's what I was talking
about. And God bless
your
friends. Okay, bye.
Absolutely. Now my wife is distraught because she just read the article where the government, this is good. You guys are going to love this. I can't help myself because only in America, ladies and gentlemen, can the government of the United States spend $665,000 to buy... Are you ready for this? To buy an illegal substance known as marijuana. And who did they buy it from? Who was the supplier for the federal government's illegal purchase of 1,400 pounds of marijuana? None other than the University of Missouri. So now let me see if I get this straight. We spent $665,000 of the taxpayers' money to purchase 1,400 pounds of marijuana. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to speculate that our DEA agents have seized well in excess of 1,400 pounds of marijuana in a single drug bust on our border. I suppose that wasn't good enough. We have to buy the good stuff from the university where they're growing it. Now, my question is this, and I want everybody, call into your favorite talk show tomorrow and ask them, can we get a push to get the government, get a FOIA request? I want to know, did the BATF issue a tax stamp to the agency that purchased this marijuana? Because, ladies and gentlemen, according to the federal law, it is illegal to purchase marijuana or sell it without a tax stamp. So did the University of Missouri issue a tax stamp to sell marijuana to the federal government? And if not, why? Why not? It is the law, after all. I mean, honestly, we read almost on a weekly basis about our DEA agents and these huge seizures of millions of dollars in cash and hundreds of pounds of marijuana. And our government goes out and buys $665,000 worth from the university. Where, pray tell, did the university get this marijuana? And why were they growing it? Do they have special permission? Guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for putting up with me in my gray mood this evening. And we'll see you guys here tomorrow, of course, for the Hoot and Holler Show. Let me see if I can find this thing, and I will play it. I'm not sure where it has gone. I know it's in here, but I will find it and play it if I don't run out of time. I always forget to do these kind of things. So please forgive me. Well, it won't let it play because I've only got 90 seconds, it appears. There it goes. Hey, everybody. We just wanted to thank you for tuning in tonight for the Constitution Hour. And every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here at PatriotFamilies.com. And I'd also like to invite you to stop in on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the Hoot and Holler Show. And on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. And on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for our very own Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Also on Thursday nights at 9 p.m., you should be tuning in to Mikey B and the Higher Truth Radio. I'd like to also invite you, if you're not already a member, to stop by our website, join up, become a member, become one of our family. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. Hope to see you there.